Save It for the Blind is sponsored by Kershaw Knives. Kershaw manufactures next-level pocket knives for outdoor enthusiasts. Save for the Blind is now also being sponsored by Roseville Motorsports. Roseville Motorsports is the greater Sacramento area's premier destination for all your power sports vehicle needs. Stop in today to browse off-road vehicles from leading manufacturers like Polaris, Yamaha, and more. Rig 'em Right, heavily seasoned gear for the die-hard waterfowl hunter. If you guys are enjoying the show, we'd love to hear from you and get your support. Please follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Give us a 5-star rating. Your reviews really help us grow and reach more people. Thank you for being a part of our community.
What's your waterfowl season in North Carolina? Are you guys done? Do you guys get like hard freezes there where you got to end early?
No, we go through the end of January.
Oh, wow. What's your opener?
Yeah. So we have the early teal in September, and then Thanksgiving split kind of deal.
You guys have a split season.
A couple weeks. Yeah. And then a couple weeks early December, we're out, and then go to the end of January.
Nice.
It's hard to get too excited about duck hunting in North Carolina in the fall and the early season. Like, the fishing's too good. Nobody's even thinking about a duck. And it's hot and too many mosquitoes and snakes and stuff like that. Yeah. So I don't get too fired up till about Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Now, like, what about the swan hunting back there? Is that a permit?
Epic.
Or?
Yeah, one draw. You put in for a draw, and it's a pretty successful draw.
Okay.
And it's, I tell people, I'm like, there's not a lot of guarantees in hunting. You know, somebody's going to take you somewhere, but that's as close to something I can guarantee you as a swan. So Gotcha. That's pretty cool.
What species of swan are you guys killing out there?
It's tundra swan.
Nice. I don't know. Yeah. What do we have out here that's coming in?
The mute swans? Yeah, we have a bunch of like mute swans out here that are like taking over marshes, and they're an invasive species. So the state's trying to figure out what the heck to do with them. But we can't shoot tundra swans out here during the general season. So we have no season on swans currently at all. So
I got you. Yeah. That's you know, the Atlantic flyways is not the best in general, but man, we have the swan. So we can't even shoot geese in North Carolina.
Really?
Stinks. Yeah, no Canada's. I mean, you get the early season, you know, resident golf course geese. We got that. But then once once the migrators start showing up, you can't even shoot them.
Huh. That's crazy.
Yeah, it sucks. It used to be really good, but I mean, we get a bunch of snows, but people just don't chase the snows around here as much.
Yeah. Well, welcome back to another episode of Save for the Blind. Today's guest is Matthew Cagle, president and founder of Rig 'em Right. So we appreciate you coming on today and talking ducks and talking hunting and talking Rig 'em Right with us.
Yeah, well, it's good to be here. Appreciate y'all having me.
Yeah, so we started off a little bit talking about North Carolina hunting. How did you get into waterfowling in general? Because when I think of North Carolina, it doesn't strike me as a waterfowling state. So what's your background into waterfowling?
Yeah, so probably an interesting intro into waterfowling. I was just like seventh grade looking for a summer job. My dad wasn't a hunter. I mean, he just worked, you know, he didn't really have any hobbies other than working. And but my granddad was a big time outdoorsman, and but he wasn't a duck hunter. They're from the western part of the state, but loved deer hunting, duck hunting, or bird hunting, squirrel hunting, anything that walked, you know, he was trying to put meat on the table, you know. But we moved to the eastern part of the state when I was a kid. And then when I was about seventh grade, I was just looking for a summer job, and a buddy of mine was like, hey, I work for this dog trainer, throwing dummies to, you know, dogs and scooping poop and feeding dogs. And I love dogs. So I started throwing dummies for a dog trainer, and I didn't even know about duck hunting that much. You know, I had a few friends that went, but I was like thinking more deer hunting. I mean, that was because my granddad, what he did. So I got into it from the dog side, and, you know, eventually another guy at the kennel was like, you want to go duck hunting? I was like, sure. And probably about, you know, 13 years old, killed my first duck, and that was it. I was in love.
Hooked after that. Love it.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So how did Rig 'Em Right get started? I mean, I think you guys have probably some of the coolest ads out there. I don't know, like an artistic view of it and snow. And I think they're always pretty neat. But you guys started from decoy line, it seems like. And now you guys got everything from bags to decoys to a little bit of everything.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, it was really, you want the short version?
We got time.
It was a complete accident. Well, so I, like I said, my dad didn't duck hunt. So, or he didn't hunt at all. So like all my gear was just crappy growing up. I mean, it was the worst. And, you know, like for a blind bag, he had some blue duffel bag that he got, you know, free at some trade show or something. And, you know, gun case was probably some, you know, beat up old wax cotton thing of my granddad's with holes all in it. And decoy line was, you know, string or shoestring or twine with spark plugs and drawer pulls or
the good old spark bolts. Plug. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And whatever I could rummage up from the shed. And so my gear was just always just awful. So this thing being weird. Hold on a second. So, you know, it was always a grind. And so I think, you know, well, then my dad was a mechanical engineer and I went to North Carolina State and majored in civil engineering. So I've kind of, you know, got that engineering mind. And so after college, I went to work for a construction company doing highways and, you know, pushing dirt and running equipment and, you know, worked my way up through as a equipment operator and a foreman and a superintendent. And then I did that for about 6 years. And then I went to work for, I got a sales job selling construction equipment back to the, you know, industry that I'd worked in. So it was kind of during that time when I got some just excellent sales training. Compass is a great company. And, you know, after a while, I was like, man, I've got these little gadgets, you know, that we were all using at our hunting club. And it's like, see if I can't get some traction with it and figure out how to sell them. And it just took off. You know, we went to the DU Expo in Wisconsin, and I took 100 packs of our decoy anchors and a couple of jerk rigs, and we sold out of them the first 8 hours of a 4-day show. And nice. I was like,
what year was this?
2008.
Okay.
So, and then that was where we met Phil Robertson, you know, Duck Commander crowd. And, you know, he's like, I love your product, son. And, you know, can you make us, you know, 20 dozen? I was like, yeah. I said, if I do and you really like them, you know, can we get stamp of approval? It's like, absolutely. And so, you know, right out of the gate, we were, you know, the official decoy anchor of, you know, Duck Commander. And they started picking up the phone and helping me. You know, they call Cabela's Bass Pro and, hey, you got to get this guy in. He's got a good product. So third customer was Cabela's. So we had a little local shop. Yeah, the little local shop. And he sold the heck out of them. And then I was like, well, let's see. But Max likes them. You know, they're the waterfowl, you know, kingpin. And they picked them up and liked them. And I was like, well, let's, you know, swing for the fences. Rolled into Bass Pro. I mean, Cabela's, and they're the same now. So I get confused. Yeah, yeah. And they, you know, they loved them too. And I walked out of that meeting like, very excited and terrified at how I was going to make it happen. It's like, I got to find somebody to make these for us because the garage wasn't going to happen. So,
yeah. At what point do you realize it's too big for you to do it yourself and maybe you need to take this as a full-time job?
So that was, I guess, a couple years after that. So it would have been, you know, probably 3 years into Rig 'Em Right. When I was like, this has legs, you know, I can, you know, we're doing X amount with me kind of moonlighting, working, you know, a jobby job and doing this on the side. And I, you know, just kind of figured if we went full time, we could really, you know, get after it. So. Jumped off the bridge.
Was your vision, like when you first started making the rigs, to have a company that then sold bags and decoys and everything at waterfowl and near, or does it kind of just evolve over time?
It just evolved over time. I mean, it kind of started with, you know, with the rigs were taking off, you know, jerk rigs were doing great. And I was like, you know, we need a decoy bag that works with our rigs, you know, because, you know, a mesh bag is just hard. You've got the system where you can carry them on a carabiner, but, you know, there was no bag to put them in. So we designed the tanker bag, mm-hmm. and that was like our first soft goods item. And then it was some multiple sizes of that. And then I was like, well, we factory makes, you know, all these soft goods. We might as well design a really cool, you know, blind bag and more decoy bags, and just snowballed out of control. Yeah.
Where do you stop at this point? I mean, how many new products are you bringing on the market currently per season?
That really varies. You know, something like blinds, that's a, you know, higher ticket item, bigger investment, development costs are more expensive. And then, of course, producing inventory gobbles up a bunch of cash flow. So we kind of look at it like that. But, you know, some of our soft goods, we're just kind of expanding into different camo options, mm-hmm. which are new products, but not technically a new design. We're, you know, now doing decoys. We launched those this year. So that's really kind of taking up the lion's share of our, you know, new product development. I say that, but we've got a dog stand coming out this year. We've got a handful of new other items coming out this year, but decoys were the big splash.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about those. So I saw the mainline series blackouts. What's the science behind that? Because, you know, I've seen the old school jugs painted black and this and that, but you guys came out with the decoy that's painted black, and I looked on your website and it's sold out. So it's obviously popular.
Yeah, we sold out very early. We actually kind of last minute went and knocked out some more production to try to, you know, get some for January. But yeah, I mean, it's just something that I started doing, you know, years ago back, gosh, in high school, probably cause all my decoys were so bad that they were mostly black anyway. And I was like, well, I can kill ducks over these, you know, and spraying them black, and just high visibility. You know, you ride by any body of water and look out there and you're like, oh, there's ducks. And like, you know, they're ducks, but they just look black. They're silhouetted out. And then during certain types of sun, I mean, well, a hen mallard, I mean, she's designed to go away. I mean, the Lord made her to disappear. And black, you know, I always tell people, I'm like, what's the most visible animal in the woods? It's a black bear. I mean, he sticks out like a sore thumb. So this black is just high visibility, and that's why we did it. And yeah, I mean, you know, people, it was very, when we launched them, we got a lot of people, man, this is great. This is awesome. You know, my granddad did it, or we've been doing it for years. And then a lot of people were like, it's really stupid. I could just go paint, you know, 10 dozen old decoys. And I'm like, you absolutely can go paint 10 dozen old decoys. Same thing. Yeah, I mean, exact same thing. I mean, me personally, I don't have 10 dozen old decoys. And if I did, I don't know where I'm going to paint that many decoys. Yeah. And, so, but if you got the room and you want to go, you know, buy $50 worth of rattle cans and get after it, you know?
Right. Yeah. I think, I don't know. It seems like recently a lot of the hunting trends are almost going backwards. We're getting into, at least in California, the big single blade spinners are coming back, where it's like that created the mojo. And now we're going backwards to the single blade spinners. Kind of the same thing with the black decoys. That started as painted jugs. Then you got into the flocking. And now it seems like people are going back to the basics.
Yep. You're exactly right.
It's like full bodies were hot for a while. Then silhouettes are now coming back, or have came back. And those were kind of gone for a while.
You know? Yeah.
So it's just kind of this revolving circle.
I had never seen it until recently. I mean, maybe it's just more on the forefront of my mind, but I had never noticed it until these last couple of years, the amount of stuff that I used to look at it and be like, no, I'm not going to use that. And now it's like, well, that kills a lot of ducks, so maybe I should use it.
Yeah.
How do you stay ahead of the curve when you're making these products, such as going with the black mainline series decoys? Are you, do you have a team that you just sit there and go, all right, what's the next thing that people want?
To answer part of your question, we do not have a team. We're pretty small. I mean, I guess two people can be a team, but most of it's just from being out, you know, with the people, you know, going to trade shows and, you know, spending time at hunting camp and, you know, bouncing ideas off hunting buddies, sitting in a blind and, you know, what works, where are some areas that need improving, or, you know, what are some holes that need to be plugged, and just kind of thinking through stuff like that. But, you know, all the product development I do, product design and development, and then manufacturing, that's, you know, all on what I do for the company. And we got a pretty small company. I mean, we're 10 people. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. And that includes me and my wife. So
you guys do a lot then for that.
Yeah, we stay pretty busy. Yeah, pretty busy, but
are you guys getting out hunting much? It sounds like kind of a smaller crew.
Yeah, not as much as I'd like, but
yeah,
you know, of course. I tell people, I'm like, the good thing is when I go, it's usually pretty epic. You know, can be a little flexible and just go when it's good, like get here, Kegel. And so I show up, you know, on last minute notice and try to bang on them pretty hard and, you know, get my belly full for a few weeks. So I just got back from Missouri and Kansas 2 days ago. And we had a pretty good hunt. Shot a big deer in Kansas and then shot greenheads in the timber.
That's a good trip.
Sounds like a pretty good trip.
It was fun. Yeah, it was fun.
Would you rather deer hunt or duck hunt? What's your passion? What's your main passion?
So I... I'd say like in college, if somebody asked me if I had to give one of them up, I probably would have given up waterfowl and chosen deer hunting. But I would say what part of that is, I mean, I did pretty dang good in high school and college on the ducks. And up until that point, I had never really killed a really good deer, you know? And that's probably had a lot to do with it. Like, I just wanted a big deer so bad. But then, you know, then I went through the rigmarole, kind of got off the ground, was cooking, and I was getting to go to, you know, epic places and checking off, you know, bucket list destinations, Canada and Dakotas and green timber. And man, I just went haywire for ducks and didn't even deer hunt for 10, 12 years or something. Uh-huh. I mean, elk hunting and mule deer hunting, but just, you know, sitting in a deer stand, whitetail hunting. I didn't do that for a long, long time. Last year, I killed a deer in Kansas. That was the first whitetail I'd killed in 12, 14 years, something. So kind of got the bug again.
Have you made your way out to California before for waterfowl?
No, I'm not. I've been out there surfing, but
but not shooting ducks.
Yeah. I love to surf. So that was, me and Buddy spent a week in a minivan, all up and down from San Diego to San Clemente. It was awesome. This was probably 5 years ago. So we both looked at each other about 4 days and like, everything's wet and sandy. We're sleeping in the back of a minivan, you know, eating bologna sandwiches, and he's a successful businessman, and we looked at each other like, we don't have to be doing this right now. We could totally stay in a hotel. And he's like, yeah, this is dumb. So we got a hotel and slept great. But yeah, it was fun.
Where'd the passion for surfing come around?
Well, I live at the beach here in North Carolina, so like all my buddies, you know, when we moved, I've always, you know, been into skating and surfing and stuff like that. But when we moved to I married a fifth generation North Carolina Outer Banker. And so she was like, we got to live at the beach. I was like, let's live at the beach. And all my buddies and stuff surf. So I kind of picked it up pretty late as far as being avid, pretty late in life, but been doing it about 15 years now. So love it. It's just such people like, it's really interesting though, because like you go, you know, we go out surfing and like there's all pickup trucks in the parking lot. They all got, you know, Ducks Unlimited stickers or, you know, hunting stickers and Browning, you know, whatever. And it's like these guys are all, I mean, a lot of the surfing community here, they commercial fish or, you know, work on a charter boat, and they guide, like duck hunting guides around here. Hunting in my county is pretty good. And they surf. So it's just like this, I think people, a lot of people they associate the surfing community with like the brady dude kind of guy.
With California. You
know? Yeah, a little bit. But like here, man, it's like a lot of dudes surf and hunt and fish. And I just, it's just being in nature, you know, it's surfing is you rely on what, you know, what nature provides, just like hunting. So it's pretty cool. Yeah. And I also like it because it's such a departure from duck hunting to where you need all that gear. I'm like, I need a pair of baggies, a stick of wax, and a surfboard to surf. And, you know, duck hunting, it's like, whew, you know, you need a lot of junk to do that.
You need a lot of gear, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Rig 'em Right. Rig 'em Right, heavily seasoned gear for the diehard waterfowl hunter. So we have the SHOT Show coming up. Do you guys have any new gear or anything that you're going to be rolling out at SHOT Show?
We've got some new species coming out for next year, doing a widgeon and a blue-winged teal. They look awesome, too. The widgeon is real proud of that one. But,
nice.
And then we're doing a bunch of stuff in mossy oak original shadowgrass. Mm-hmm. They're kind of really resurrecting. You alluded to that earlier, like old coming is back. New now. Yeah. So like bottom land is killing it. And brown camo. We're doing some stuff in like an old, you know, old school brown camo. And then
Jeff's a big fan of just like the brown wax coating.
Oh, yeah.
He loves that stuff.
Blends in. Oh, man. Yeah. That's great.
That's right.
Solid, traditional.
People are going for the solid colors now. A lot of the companies are coming out with solids and people are hunting solids. And just, it's for me, I can't stay ahead of the curve. I just see people do it and I just stick with what I know works. But
yeah. No, I've always liked the solid colors. It just everything gets muddy and dirty, anyways, you know? So
yeah. Oh, I like it too.
Out of all the places that you've been able to waterfowl hunt, I'm sure, which has been plenty, like you stated, what's been your favorite place that you've been to?
Favorite? I mean, I don't know. I love shooting greenheads and timber. Mm. So that's pretty good. And, you know, my, one of our sales rep has a really nice club and a lodge in Missouri. So I get out there every year, but another good buddy, Rob Reynolds at Ranchland Outfitters up in Alberta, is just spectacular. I mean, it's as good as it gets. So I like going up there. And I'm going to Nebraska here in 3 weeks.
Very cool.
Ethan Kirk at Angel Wings. He's got it going on too. So
nice.
It's hard to, you know, it's hard to nail it down to one favorite. Yeah. I've hunted the, you know, Platte River, some of those warm springs off the Platte. That's 13 degrees for four solid days, and you're still just smashing ducks, and everything's frozen. So cool.
Yeah, that's definitely one on my bucket list, is hit that area.
Yeah.
You know, I think we need,
yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, we need to get out more from our rice fields.
Yeah, it's hard sometimes, but
yeah.
Hard. Got to get there.
What?
Matthew, what were some of the challenges with like the manufacturing and kind of sticking with that and deadlines, getting product before duck season? You got any stories on that and how difficult that can be?
Oh, how much time we got?
Floor is yours.
Yeah, it's a struggle for sure. You know, I mean, your lead times and, you know, we're still getting orders and forecasts from our customers, and, you know, we got to start shipping goods in May. So gotta, you know, keep the crystal ball fairly well polished, hoping to glean some information from that, you know, throughout the year. But it's tough, and you know, it's just so unpredictable with shipping, you know, prices and tariff stuff and just turmoil overseas, and it's a grind. But you know, one thing I think that I've done different than a lot of people that I know in the industry is, like, I'm super hands-on with the production. So I'm over at our factories a lot, you know, two, three trips a year at least. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 2 weeks a trip. So I've been to China 41 times.
Oh, wow. So,
yeah. Yeah.
How's your language going along?
No, not so good. None, zero. I can say rice, water, bathroom, you know, maybe name a few cities, but yeah, it's a crazy language. I can understand a little bit of it.
That's better than me.
Speaking it's, yeah, not so good.
How big are the factories, and are they mainly making outdoor equipment, or is it like everything in these factories?
It varies, you know, but you're going to find a, you know, factory that does soft goods, you know, cut and sew factory, and they may make luggage, you know, for somebody, or duffel bags, or, I mean, can maybe some, you know, other hunting vendors, but, I try to stay out of those factories because stuff can kind of leak out a little bit, but, and then, you know, a lot of the rigs are made in factories that make a lot of fishing stuff. So,
okay.
But yeah, decoy factories, you know, they make decoys, of course. But then they'll do pumpkins for Halloween, you know, any kind of expanded, you know, Santa Clauses and skeleton, you know, bones, skeletons and stuff, any plastic type molded pieces. So that's always kind of funny.
Out of curiosity, so you say you want to come up with a new decoy. What's the process? Do you have a carver that carves a mold, and then it gets sent over to China for them to make it? Or how does that work?
Yeah, so you have a carver, and work with him on, you know, what you're looking for poses and stuff like that. And then where you take, you know, a wooden carving, and then you make a cast of it. So it's just so you have a duplicate. You know, then we ship the cast over, open the mold, and then I'm working, you know, with the painter to come up with paint schemes.
And paint gets done over there as well, or paint gets done back here?
Yeah, over there, yeah.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, everything's done over there. So, yeah, like, we'll, you know, send lots of pictures and, you know, how, and then, I mean, it's tough, you know, to get color variations right, and
yeah,
certainly if you're picky, and it becomes difficult. So, and I, you know, I tell people, like, you can develop a product only so good from afar, you know, remotely with pictures and sending samples, you know, back and forth. But, like, you just inevitably you get something and you just have to be there. You know, it's like this stitching just isn't quite right. And it's just so hard to communicate exactly how you want it to, you can get in front of. I mean, a lot of times, I mean, this last time I went over there, went to the factory to get the widgeon right, and I'm convinced we would have never got it right without me going over there. And it's a pretty grueling trip for 30 minutes of work.
I was going to say, that's got to be tough when you know it's just such a small, minute change. You're like, well, got to fly halfway across the world for a day's worth of work to make sure that the product's correct.
Absolutely. And that's pretty much what I did. I mean, I took care of some other stuff while I'm there, but yeah, 16-hour flight from Atlanta. Mm-hmm. But
that's daunting. Yeah.
What was the hardest product to develop? Like, the most time consuming and
man, I don't know. Oh, probably our Hideout series ground blinds, like the big, like, for, you know, deer and turkey hunting, because we actually did that one through COVID, so I couldn't even go over there. That was a nightmare, but got it. It took a while.
Yeah,
it took, you know, it took 6 months longer than it could have if I could have just, you know, got there. And it, we spent a pile of money shipping samples back and forth. You know, I'd draw on it, change this, you know, put pins on a tag and all of a sudden and have to ship it back. And I mean, it was awful, but they got it done.
Now that you guys have duck decoys, are you guys going to try to expand to turkey decoys? I see some turkey fans in the background of your video there.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably a long way down the line. I mean, we're going to keep doing the duck stuff and then, you know, we'll start working on geese. And
oh yeah. You guys still got to
go down that route. Decoy stuff. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Yeah, that's our vision to be.
Is it hard making a product of something, say goose decoys, where you in your home state don't use them very often?
No, not really. I mean, you know, I hunt plenty of geese and I know what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
In the decoy. And of course, you know, carver's gonna, you know, do a good job on the carving. But, you know, from like our customer base standpoint, you know, we've got, you know, plenty of, you know, customer base in upper Midwest and in, you know, Honker Haven. So it's, not something that, you know, it's going to be geographic, like where
you can make North Carolinians a decoy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, what about your customers? Are they going to traditional brick and mortar store? Is it mostly online sales through your website?
No, online sales is a very, very, very small piece of our business.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
I mean, we are a, you know, B2B company. So, you know, all of your big box accounts and all the way down to little small, you know, mom and pop hunting shops carry our stuff. That is 95% of our business. Yeah. We have a full website with all of our products on it, and certainly somebody can buy it there, but for the most part, it's just where people have a place to go, you know, look at it and learn about it and read it and communicate and connect with the customers. But we are not real. I mean, yes, we take orders and sell stuff, but we're not really set up for that in our warehouse. I mean, guys, I want to see, you know, boxes of cases of stuff going out and pallets of stuff going out, you know, more than individual units. So
interesting. What's your most popular item that you guys are pushing out?
I mean, certainly our rigging, you know, our high volume items. But I mean, really, you know, like our lowdown backpack's been, I mean, sold out of that one in November, you know?
Yeah. I'm looking at it right now. It looks sweet.
Yeah.
I think this would be a good backpack for people that hunt California refuges because you can fit a ton of stuff in it and still
you can fit all the compartments and stuff, which is nice.
It's nice. Yeah.
With all the different waterfowl brands that have been definitely popping up recently, but I'd say in the last decade, how have you guys been able to kind of differentiate yourself from everyone else in your competition?
Yeah, I mean, I think just, you know, branding, just, you know, continuing to just kind of be who we are, you know, maintain our identity. We don't really play in that sort of $19.99, you know, price point product realm, you know. I mean, certainly we could come up with a line of less expensive stuff and, you know, sell high volume at smaller margins, but I mean, I can't bring myself through that. You know, we've had customers like, can you just make a cheap mesh decoy bag? And
yeah,
like, sure. And then I start looking at it and I'm like, that needs to be double stitched. This needs to be reinforced. And I really hate that pull string. It's too flimsy. And next thing you know, it's not a $9.99 mesh bag. It's $29.99. You know, I'm just going to stick to that. I mean, if it's not something we feel good about putting our name on, that's going to last. And
yeah,
I mean, obviously we have product fail and somebody calls and we replace it. They're, especially when they're really nice, but people aren't always really nice about it.
Isn't amazing what a little bit of a nice attitude can go a long way in this kind of world.
Oh my gosh. Oh, some people email and they start with the threat, you know, yeah. And it's like, if you don't replace this, I'm going to X, Y, Z. And we're like, I mean, we're going to replace it anyway, you know? And then you always get the customer that's like, man, I love your stuff. I hate to say this, but I've got this product, that product. I've been using your stuff for 10 years and I really hate to ask, but man, I had, you know, dog vest seam or whatever. And we're like, my wife handles all this for us, by the way.
Yeah.
And so she replaced the dog vest, throws in a hat and a hoodie, you know, just cause he was nice.
Right.
And then she also probably shouldn't say this. You know, you go in like some of the gas stations and they have like stores or whatever, like bounce checks, you know, taped on the back, you know, yeah. Customers who like wrote a bad check. Like she's got a naughty list. Oh yeah. She knows who's like trying to pull the wool over her eyes, you know, like, oh, I bought this, and, you know, it's failed or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, repeat customers, I should say.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No. Yeah. She's just a typical woman, man. She don't forget stuff, you know. They don't never let anything go.
Yeah. No, I think that, you know, having a good relationship with your customers, one of my favorite places to order from for big game hunting stuff was Go Hunt for the longest time and still is, because when they first started and they were smaller, they had handwritten letters in every single package that I ordered. And, you know, it's not that big of a thing, but I opened it and I was like, they care. Like, they're not just shoving this in and sending it. And I will continue to support them because of that customer service. I love
absolutely.
It.
Yeah, I love Go Hunt. They're a customer of ours. They carry Rig 'Em Right stuff.
Yeah, it's customer service, I think I've learned in this job especially, goes a long way with just helping people out as best as you can. It seems like it's few and far between nowadays where that sort of stuff happens. So if you can do it, it makes a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, somebody will call Heather and she's like, you know, she goes, give me your cell phone number. Let me FaceTime you. I'll get Matthew and kind of walk you through something like setting up maybe they're having a hiccup, setting up a layout blind or something like that. And, you know, she's like, can you come in the showroom and, you know, help somebody through it? And we'll FaceTime the guy. And he's like, so what do y'all do with Rig 'Em Right? We're like, well, we own Rig 'Em Right. And they're like kind of blown away that we're helping them, you know. I'm like, dude, that's what we do, man.
That's
pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah, you just don't get that much anymore. So that's great.
Not anymore. You get more of a voice,
you get a robot.
Yeah,
gosh. Yeah.
It's rough these days.
Just looking through your website, that you got lots of different items that you could buy, from layout blinds, blind bags, decoys. Now, what if you were to recommend? You say you had a brand new hunter, and they said, "I want to purchase three things from your website." What would those three things be?
A brand new
waterfowl hunter.
He doesn't own a single thing.
Nope.
I would tell him, you know, a 12 pack of mallards, a pack of decoy anchors, and a blind bag.
There you go.
You know,
I like that.
Yeah. Cause he could drag the decoys out without a decoy bag. And, you know, he's going to want to have a pack of beef jerky and a honey bun, so you got to carry that and something and some ammo.
Yeah, so like, but Matthew said, everybody listening, you can find their stuff on their website, rigemright.com. you can also find it at all or most of the major manufacturers. We've got pretty much all of them out here that people can find your stuff in, but definitely take a look. And we also appreciate you sponsoring this podcast today. So for those that don't know, Rig 'Em Right is a sponsor of today's podcast, so we really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Matthew, do you use more like a backpack type guy, or are you a traditional blind bag with the carrying handle?
Yeah, I'm a blind bag guy more than a backpack. I used our lowdown backpack deer hunting, and I loved it.
Oh, yeah.
That square bottom, it just sat in the stand really nice, and kind of how all my stuff was doing. And I mean, not to talk about deer hunting, but I hunted from 5:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. for 5 days. Oh. Sitting in solitary confinement in this blind, And I was supposed to leave the next morning to go to Missouri. I was like, I'm gonna sit. I got a couple hours. I'm gonna sit for a couple hours. I'll sit in the stand, and my buddy was supposed to pick me up at 10:45. At 10:30, I seen a few little deer, nothing big. And I was like, I'm gonna film something for our Instagram of why I like this backpack for deer hunting, you know. And I started to kind of, 10 minutes left before he showed up, and I started rummaging my round and pretty much tapped out. I mean, it's 10:30, sun's out, hadn't seen a deer in 3 hours. So I'm starting to put my stuff together, kind of stage it all out, do a little Instagramming, and I caught a flash out of the corner of my eye and looked 200 yards away, and a whole bunch of deer started running down in the bottom, and there was a nice shooter buck chasing him, and he ran 87 yards away, and I whacked him. So
Nice.
it was crazy. I was like buzzer beater in overtime. So yeah, pretty crazy. But yeah, that was the backpack. But no, for duck hunting, man, I'm a blind bag guy.
I switch off.
I've been both. Yeah, we have a rice blind that we hunt out of, and we've got so many things that are on batteries and this and that.
Right.
I've had a couple blind bags in the past from other brands that haven't lasted throughout the season because of the weight that it carries, and then it gets wet, and then the stitching comes on. But might have to try a Rig'em Right one because I haven't tried one of those yet. So that'll be next on my list to see if it can stand up to the wear and tear of a bunch of batteries. So,
Okay. Well, send me your address. We'll take care
perfect.
of
I
you.
will do that because I would love to
All right.
test it out. It's I'm always trying to figure out what the best thing to get from the end of our check to our blind is as comfortably as possible and not have a failure in a product.
Right. Yeah. We'll give it a whirl.
Perfect. Yeah, I do that.
Perfect. Matthew, want to leave us with anything?
Can I come hunting with y'all?
Please, please
I need to
do.
come to California, man.
We're not going to surf with you though, but we'll go duck hunting.
Well, that's fine. That'll do.
Any
Yeah. But
anytime you want to come out, we would love to take you out.
If you've never
okay.
experienced it out here, it's pretty special in terms of, I mean, you could shoot 10 darks, 20 snows, you shoot 7 mallards a day.
Shoot next year, you can shoot 3 pintail a day.
Yeah. So you should,
Really?
yeah.
Yep. Wow. That's cool.
Get you on the books.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's
Whenever you're free, if you're out here, we'll take you.
yeah. So our national sales manager, Jordan Murdoch, he lives in Idaho, but he's from California. His family's from California. He grew up in California, just absolute duck hunting fanatic. So he's eat up with it.
Let
A
us
California
know.
boy.
That's
yeah, I
awesome.
heard a California guy doesn't even surf. What am I thinking?
Hey, I've never even been on a board before, and I've
Oh,
never
man.
left this place. Yeah. But yeah, no, you're more than welcome. Let us know when you ever want to come out here, and we'll get you all set up.
Heck yeah, it'd be awesome. Yeah.
Well, we appreciate obviously sponsoring the episode and the podcast,
Yeah.
and thank you so much for spending your morning with us.
Yeah. You're welcome, and thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
Right on.
All right. Talk to you later, Matthew. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Save It for the Blind podcast. You can find our podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.